The year was 1972, and it was spring. The Congress of the United States, after 50 years, had lit up with the warmth of bipartisanship and embraced the rights of women to equality in our precious democracy. Our entire nation seemed poised to uphold our UU covenant to affirm and promote worth and dignity of every person and affirm justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The Equal Rights Amendment offered to Congress, originally back in 1923, had been reintroduced in 1971 and passed both the House and the Senate. Here's the text of this amendment that languishes still, waiting for one more of the required 38 states to ratify. Section 1, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Section 2, the Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. And Section 3, this amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. The Constitution itself puts no time limit on the ratification of amendments, and yet here Congress had set a deadline, 7 years. California, along with 22 other states, ratified it within the year. Within 5 years, 35 of the necessary 38 states, that is three-quarters of the states, had ratified the ERA with wide bipartisan support, including Presidents Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and Jimmy Carter. And there it stalled. President Carter approved a joint resolution of Congress to extend the deadline 3 more years, but no other states joined in ratifying the ERA until 2017. And 4 states, meanwhile, had retracted their ratifications between 1973 and 1978. These legal issues have never been decided. Can a deadline be set or extended? Can a state take back its ratification? These are questions that may come before the Supreme Court if the ERA is finally revived. Both Nevada and Illinois came forward to ratify in 2017 and 2018. If just one more state ratifies, all these questions will face Congress and the courts. Well, let's look back at some questions. What changes to law, policy, and practices did the ERA actually seek? And then, what destroyed that support for the ERA? And what brings it to life again? Soon after Congress had approved the ERA under President Gerald Ford, a Republican, a year of federally funded state and national conferences had culminated in the National Women's Conference held in Houston in 1977. This critical conference was led by prominent feminists, including Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem, and Bella Abzug. Ms. Magazine saw its accomplishments, quote, as 4 days that changed the world. That conference was meant to spell out the changes that the ERA would support. So they issued a national plan of action that overall surveyed man-made barriers, laws, social customs, prejudices that kept a majority of women in inferior positions and denied them full control of their lives and of their bodies. That plan recorded the reality, the national plan from Houston, recorded that reality that women are victims of crimes of violence and are degraded as sex objects. That women are poorer than men, while minority women face the double burden of discrimination. That women hold lesser roles in the legal system, in our political parties, businesses, unions, schools, and other institutions. That national plan of action in 1977 called for equal opportunities for women in managerial posts, in federally funded institutions like libraries and museums and universities and public radio and TV. It called for the end of violence against women in the home, support for shelters for battered women, and better law enforcement and prevention of the abuse of children. It sought federally supported quality daycare, childcare for working families. It asked for the inclusion of women in programs promoting small and minority business. Besides affirming equal educational opportunity at all levels, the plan sought to end the sex and race stereotyping of school books and our school curriculum. It asked the President and Congress to support a policy of full employment for women, quote, so that all women who are able and willing to work may do so. It called for a national health insurance plan, one that would include comprehensive family planning services and reproductive health care and increased research on, quote, safe alternative forms of contraception, particularly male contraception. Not our usual focus in health plans. Unemployed homemakers should receive Social Security benefits, not just their working husbands. Discrimination against women in prison sentences and their treatment in penal facilities should end. Rape law should be reformed. And then this was a peculiar note. Those states that required the Hale instruction should be prohibited. Well, what was the Hale instruction? That was a jury instruction that was prescribed by a 17th century judge. And it reads, rape is an accusation easily to be made and hard to be proved and harder to be defended by the party accused, though never so innocent. I'm going to try that again. Yes, it's 17th century language, but this was what the judge was commanded to say to the jury. Rape is an accusation easily to be made and hard to be proved and harder to be defended by the accused party, though never so innocent. Not least, that national plan supported the U.S. Supreme Court decisions which guaranteed reproductive freedom to women, like Roe versus Wade in 1973, and it called for the end to discrimination against lesbians. As the women left that Houston conference with their national plan that was their work accomplished, they wept for joy and held hands and sang together, "We Shall Overcome." That was 1977. Just 3 years later, that national plan lay in tatters. As soon as Congress passed the ERA in 1972, that conservative genius of anti-feminism, Phyllis Schlafly, had mobilized groups that never before had joined hands. Christian women, Catholics, Protestant evangelicals, Mormons, the John Birch Society, the KKK, anti-communists, anti-United Nations groups, segregationists in Congress and in state government, anti-abortionists, anti-gay and anti-lesbian forces, anti-Semites, and Republicans who wanted low taxes. While the liberals were meeting in Houston and constructing that national plan, Phyllis Schlafly and other activist conservative women ran their own meeting, filled with busloads of men and women from conservative parishes. They issued 4 petitions to the president and Congress. That Congress mandate a right to life amendment that included fetuses from the moment of conception. That preschool child development and child care must not be financed by the federal government. That the ERA must not be ratified, and that homosexual and lesbian rights must be opposed, including their right to adopt children and to teach in schools, since homosexuality was, quote, against the laws of God. And they sang, "Stop the ERA in the USA. Don't let them take our rights away. Everywhere you go, let the people know we're women. That's what we want to stay." Schlafly sold conservative women on the argument that the ERA would destroy the traditional family with its male breadwinner and the subservient female stay-at-home mom. The ERA would destroy the special rights of women to custody of their children, to alimony in case of divorce, and to exemption from military service. At that time, there was conscription, of course. Preventing child abuse would ban spanking, and parents would be accused of child abuse. Federally funded child care would indoctrinate children, as was done in Hitler's youth camps. Reproductive and abortion rights destroyed babies, and, quote, "unborn children are the least powerful and the most helpless." And of course, a national health insurance program would eliminate freedom of choice. With President Carter's defeat in 1980 by Ronald Reagan, our political and cultural world took a 180-degree turn. Schlafly's movement had captured the Republican Party. More liberal Republican women stepped away from their party, while the Democratic Party became the home of feminists, and that rift divides us today. Everywhere with Reagan in office, pro-family conservative women rolled back feminist gains. For example, pro-family leaders defeated the proposed, quote, act to prevent domestic violence. They claimed that centers for battered women were encouraging women to leave their families and were promoting disintegration of the family. Feminist columnist Ellen Goodman wrote that to the religious right, it appeared that an intact family was more important than an intact ex-wife. Conservative women in unratified states were more determined than ever to kill the ERA. Schlafly ever more firmly forged the connection between the religious right and the Republican Party under both Bush presidents, and she vigorously supported Donald Trump until her death from cancer on Labor Day in 2016. Something in today's air has changed, though. Most likely, the Me Too movement has had its effect. Two more states have now ratified, Nevada and Illinois, and just one more state is needed to reach the 38 required. Curiously enough, many of the fears that Schlafly promoted about how the ERA would harm women have come to pass anyway without an ERA. Divorced women no longer can count on alimony from their spouse. Men's assertion of their custody rights over their children finds strong support in today's courts. Military service is no longer compulsory for either gender, and both women and men volunteer. The rights of gays and lesbians to marry and to adopt children have been affirmed by the Supreme Court. What hasn't changed? Most of the policies and programs that feminists hoped and worked for are presently off the table. The attention to violence against women and children in the home, shelters for battered women, and better enforcement of laws to protect battered women have come with each Democratic administration and gone with each Republican administration. The Violence Against Women Act, first passed under Clinton in 1994, has now expired. It was renewed by the Democratic House this past April, but it waits for passage in the Republican-controlled Senate, and it can be vetoed by the president. Meanwhile, every minute, on average, 20 people experience intimate partner physical violence, and 94% of murder-suicide victims are women. The wage gap between men and women continues, with a wider gap for minority women. Feminists called for a national health insurance, one that would include comprehensive family planning services and reproductive health care. Today, 28 million Americans are without health insurance. Reproductive health care is under attack. 9 states have now passed laws banning early abortions, and most apply the ban even to cases of rape and incest. The federal courts are now stacked with conservative judges, including our Supreme Court, judges who may well overturn Roe versus Wade, judges who may side with extreme abortion laws. So what would ratification of the ERA do? Democrats and Republicans over the last four decades have been increasingly at odds over almost every issue that concerns Americans. With one more state ratification, the question of the validity of ratification itself is likely to consume the courts immediately, with lasting consequences. The Constitution, however, sets no time limits on ratification, and no provision in the Constitution allows rescission, taking back, once a state has ratified. If ratification were confirmed, the ERA would put us just on the threshold of change. But with ratification, laws that ensure the rights of women would no longer rise and fall with the ascendance of Democratic or Republican control of Congress and the White House. It's very likely reproductive rights, including abortion, would become an unalienable right and may be funded by the federal government. The ERA would likely overturn countless state laws in the areas of criminal law, family law, education, and insurance rates that disadvantage women. We face a time of chaos, a time of change. The 2016 election saw an upsurge of Democrats, especially women, elected to the House of Representatives. The elections of 2020 will tell us if we are to remain in gridlock with a conservative Senate and a liberal House, or whether we shall usher in a time when all human rights will be affirmed, when our nation at last affirms and promotes the dignity of every person, including women, with justice, equity, and compassion for all. I do believe we all shall walk together, hand in hand, someday, in the freedom to be who we are. So please rise in body or in spirit, and join in singing We Shall Overcome, our hymn number 169 in our gray hymnal.